Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths. I am Yada. Each weekday here on GCN, we strive to expose and even condemn on occasion the destructive myths which are associated with religion and politics, with patriotism in the media, and with military and economic schemes. We don't want you to be a victim of them. Instead of merely presenting the news, our mission is to understand what is happening behind those headlines, predicting how these events will shape our world over the next 5 to 10 years. Then during our second hour, because it's important, we engage God on His terms through evidence and reason, since His is the lone reliable voice in an exceedingly disingenuous world. Our phone number over the next 2 hours, if you'd like to participate in this discussion, is 877-300-7645. I'd like to begin today's program talking about something that very few people actually know about. It is something that could profoundly change the debate that is at least simmering throughout America. That would be talk radio. Now, it is true that talk radio today is dominated by those who have a simple agenda: Democrats bad, Republicans good. And it's true that Democrats are bad. It's not true that Republicans are good. But the likes of Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity have garnered huge audiences. And then there is others that are in the 3, 4, 5, and 6 position as they shuffle around from time to time. But even if we may disagree with half of the equation that is promoted by Rush Limbaugh, for example, there are very few people who have had as positive an influence on Americans, at least providing information, encouraging thoughtful analysis of the political plight of this country. Well, there's a group of people in America who have recently become very successful. They don't want you to be able to listen to Rush. At first, they tried to compete with him. They created Air America to be a liberal version of the Rush Limbaugh show so that they could mimic his success and provide an alternative for what they would consider the enlightened and thinking individuals. It failed. Now, it failed mostly because liberalism isn't about thinking. It is about reacting. It's about feeling. For the most part, it is a position that can't be defended. It's always presented as new, and yet collectivization is the oldest political system on earth. It's always presented as compassionate and fair. And yet through the ages, there's been nothing more vicious nor less fair than collectivized governments. It is the history of man, really, is concentrated power. And there really are no circumstances that you can point to say, boy, look how well it worked. Never does. It's old. It's tried. It's failed. But it doesn't matter. They have, in their own minds, rationalized that their approach is enlightened, that it is compassionate, that it is fair, and that anyone who speaks against them is hateful and bigoted. Yes, they have but one means of responding to their critics, and that's the reason they want to shut Rush Limbaugh down. They can't debate with him. They can't ever present a single argument that shows that they hold the moral high ground or that they can propose a superior position and defend it. So they want to silence him because their only argument is ad hominem. Ad hominem, for those who may not know, is the attack on the individual. Rather than dealing with the message, you slander the messenger. That's all they do. So who are these people, and why would I say they're about to influence the country in such a monumental way? They are the most extreme liberals in this country. They would tell you that they are dominated by those who wish to promote the gay and lesbian agenda. And they consider anyone who speaks against the gay and lesbian agenda as a homophobe and as hateful and as a promoter of hate speech. Well, that's not true, of course, but it doesn't matter. That is what they have been able to engineer through political correctness, through the media, through academic institutions. And so a collection of the most liberal of liberals and those who are driving the gay and lesbian agenda came up with the idea that they should be shrill voices because they recognize that, particularly as the gay and lesbian agenda, you can't criticize them unless you want to be publicly crucified, unless you want to lose it all. If you're not willing to go along with their program and not just accept homosexuality, for example, I don't care if someone is homosexual or heterosexual. It means nothing to me. What your choice is and your sexual preference is your decision. Don't care. Don't want it promoted. Don't want it legitimized. Don't want it presented as normal when it represents 2% of the people of the nation. Don't want it thrown in my face. But, you know, I don't want a couple's heterosexual relationship thrown in my face. I don't want adultery promoted as good or normal, although it may be normal. Certainly don't want it promoted as good. What people do heterosexually is their business. But the gay and lesbian community has decided that they want their lifestyle not to be accepted, but to be considered noble, superior. And they have set the agenda, framed the issue such that anyone who speaks against them is considered inferior, hateful, demeaning. And so the people who have set themselves up in this society as being beyond reproach are leading a crusade against Rush Limbaugh to shut him down. Now, why should you care? Because they're taking talk radio down with it. The boycott against Rush Limbaugh has been successful. And there are enough machinations behind the scenes to give it an aura of success and of legitimacy. For example, the story was leaked a few days ago that Cumulus, which is among the largest syndicates of radio stations, is dropping Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity. It will cost Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity 40 stations, which is not large in number, but they are huge stations. It will cost them around half of their audience. Now, Rush and Sean aren't talking about this, but nonetheless, it's true. And at the leak was presented under the guise that the boycott against Rush Limbaugh for hateful speech had eroded revenues so that national advertisers were no longer advertising on their programs or even on stations that carried their programs, so that that's why they dropped them, and that their $2 million loss in the last quarter was blamed on the success of the boycott against Rush Limbaugh. And so they're going to lose half their audience. Now, the truth is not that at all. Cumulus was part of a scheme to turn the reps who bundle advertising for syndicated radio programs, a group of reps, formed a monopoly, and then they leveraged that monopoly to take over Westwood One. At the time was one of the larger radio station owners and content providers. And they changed the format of Westwood One so that they went away from standard talk and drove it into the ground, so it became worthless. And through all sorts of maneuvers trying to save it, ended up with a disaster. Somewhere in this mess, too, as I understand it, you get GE Capital. And GE Capital is involved because these companies, because of their machinations, all specifically designed to end conservative talk radio, which is talk radio. You might say, why did GE Capital get into the midst of this funding? Why should you care? Well, Immelt of GE needed to get approval for some power plants because they make turbines, for engine sales to Chinese companies. By the way, the things that he wanted approval for were good for America. They were good for GE. They were good for America. But the President of the United States doesn't play fair. It's not about what's good for America. It's about what's good for him. And so a quid pro quo was arranged. And the one thing that insecure, dishonest, disingenuous men like Obama crave is to be applauded constantly and have no one ever criticize them. And so he wanted to silence those who held him accountable. He wanted to silence Rush Limbaugh. The quid pro quo was, you fund the takeover of these stations so that in the end, there is no longer a Rush Limbaugh program. There is no longer a Sean Hannity program. And they have been enormously successful. We are on the cusp, within 6 months, of having talk radio programming as we know it be neutered to the point that there is no funding for it, and stations will drop it. If you listen to radio a lot, you may have noticed that in the last 6 months, there has been this enormous migration to sports talk radio. CBS has created a sports talk radio. NBC is trying to create a sports product. And what has happened is that you take a share of market that may be two share wide, and it's being oversaturated, all to fill the gap where talk radio has been. We have a serious problem on our hands, and it is being orchestrated by the few to the detriment of the many. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to Shatteremus. I'm your host, Yada. I'd like to read a letter. It's an open letter, so I don't think that the author of the letter would have any concerns about me reading it to you. It's funny, though. It's a letter written by a person who makes a living, or at least did make a living, by making letters private. His company is Lavabit. This is what he wrote, my fellow users. I have been forced to make a difficult decision. To become complicit in crimes against the American people, or to walk away from nearly 10 years of hard work by shutting down Lavabit. After significant soul searching, I have decided to suspend operations. I wish that I could legally share with you the events that led to my decision. I cannot. I feel that you deserve to know what's going on. The First Amendment is supposed to guarantee me the freedom to speak out in situations like this. Unfortunately, Congress has passed laws that say otherwise, that say that I cannot speak openly to you. As things currently stand, I cannot share my experiences over the past 6 weeks, even though I have twice made the appropriate requests. What's going to happen now? We've already started preparing the paperwork needed to continue to fight for the Constitution in the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals. A favorable decision would allow me to resurrect Lavabit as an American company. The experience has taught me one very important lesson. Without congressional action or a strong judicial precedent, I would strongly recommend against anyone trusting their private data to a company with physical ties in the United States. Sincerely, Ladar Levinson, owner and operator, Lavabit, LLC. Now, I'm sure that this audience, informed and rational, understands exactly what the man said. What he didn't say is what he said, which is that the United States government, its judicial branch and its law enforcement branch, came to Lavabit with a demand, a court order, to do what is illegal in absolute violation of the U.S. Constitution, and not only violated the Constitution once but twice. The U.S. government came to him with the same demand that it has come to with all of the other internet-based companies that are part of PRISM to spy on ordinary Americans without due process in what is unreasonable search and seizure. And he said, no, I am not going to give the government, the NSA, the opportunity to spy on my clients. No, their correspondence amongst one another is private. This nation used to have privacy. It's part of our freedom. No, you can't have access to my files. And he said, I'm sure that, you know, the country needs to know that you're trying to force companies to do this. And the next part of their demand was to say, this court order comes with an edict that you can't talk about it. Otherwise, you'll be in contempt of court. You know how there's a gag order in so many court cases imposed by the judge, where you no longer have the freedom to discuss the facts of the case? Well, that's what they did here, now violating the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. This man had the character to say, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to be part of the problem. Congratulations. If only more like him. Of course, Microsoft capitulated. Apple capitulated. Facebook capitulated. Skype capitulated. Google not only capitulated, but was a huge author of the crime itself. This is what we've become. A nation where the big corporations capitulate with the government for total control over the people. The reason this is a freedom issue is that if you have access to all information about everyone, then you game the judicial system. You can deprive those individuals of their freedom at any time. And they have no hope of defending themselves. That is what we've become. The Snowden incident is one of the most troubling in the history of this country, because Snowden was a hero. He did what needed to be done, and yet on both sides of the aisle, politicians are saying that he is a criminal. Even over the weekend, calling Russia, saying that they had gone back to the Cold War tactics and that they were wrong, not ourselves. Good morning. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yetta. Reuters is reporting that three U.S. soldiers were killed in Afghanistan's eastern borderlands on Sunday. U.S. and NATO officials said that the first U.S. combat deaths had occurred this month. The U.S. soldiers from the NATO-led International Security Assistance Force, the ISAF, were killed by insurgents, the U.S. Military official told Reuters. The NATO-led mission has about 100,000 individual troops in Afghanistan, of which 68,000 are Americans. Those numbers are expected to reduce sharply before the end of the NATO-led combat mission, December 31 in 2014, a year and a half from now. More than 2,100 U.S. soldiers have died during the war in Afghanistan. So while the deaths of these three young men is sad, it's tragic. I must ask my country what was gained by their sacrifice. Please tell me. What was gained by the more than 2,100 U.S. deaths that preceded theirs? How is it that we have made America safer by invading Afghanistan? How have we made Afghanistan better by our invasion? If you can name a way that we have made Afghanistan better, then can you tell me what will happen when we leave? And if you even have an answer for that, please tell me. Where in the U.S. Constitution it written that it is appropriate for Americans to shed their blood and to bring their weapons into foreign countries to resolve problems within those countries? I ask again, what was gained by the death of these three Americans in Afghanistan yesterday? What was gained by 2,100 U.S. deaths in Afghanistan over the past 12 years? Why were they there? What were they doing? Let's speak honestly about this. We went into Afghanistan on the basis of miscalculations and lies. We wanted to blame Al-Qaeda for the suicide bombings of 9/11. It wasn't an Al-Qaeda plot. The FBI knew it. The U.S. president knew it. I knew it. The plot for 9/11 was created by Ramzi Youssef in the Philippines, as was the Bongica plot, which is the plot that requires us to no longer carry any fluids above on airplanes. He came up with a plan to train Muslims, jihadists, at U.S. flight schools. He designated the airports that they would take off, how they would make their way into the cockpit, and how they would then fly the planes into the specific buildings that he listed 5 years before this all occurred. And it wasn't that Ramzi Youssef was difficult to find. No, he was in U.S. custody because he was the perpetrator of the first bombing of the World Trade Center. He went to trial. We had access to all of this information at his trial and paid no attention to it. And so when the bombings occurred, we blamed Al-Qaeda and then went into Afghanistan because we knew that there was an Al-Qaeda presence in Afghanistan because we created it. Yeah, there wouldn't have been an Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan had the United States not created it, but we did. Zygmunt Brzezinski is national security advisor to Jimmy Carter, decided that I have this harebrained scheme. Why don't we give the Russians a taste of what they gave us in Vietnam in Afghanistan? They want Afghanistan because it provides access for them to the Caspian Sea and the oil and gas reserves. That's why they want it. But why don't we take it from them? Because if we can bribe Pakistan to be our friend, and we build a pipeline through Afghanistan and through Pakistan, then we will have access to the oil and gas reserves at the Caspian Sea. So let's give them a taste of their own medicine, and let's create a proxy war in Afghanistan. That was Zygmunt Brzezinski's harebrained scheme. He's proud of it, by the way. Wrote a book about it. So did the former Secretary of Defense, Gates, who conspired with him. Proud of what they have done. And so they got the United States to supply some $5 billion worth of weapons, Stinger missiles and the like, and money to the Taliban. They didn't go directly to the Taliban, by the way. They went to Pakistan, who controlled the Taliban, who the Taliban reported to, just like the U.S. Marines reports to the U.S. government. They went to the Pakistani government, their ISI, their military leaders, and their political leaders, and they negotiated a deal where we would bribe Pakistan to funnel money and weapons to the Taliban for the express purpose of creating a war in Afghanistan. Well, that war killed 2 million Afghanis. We didn't seem to care about that. Oh, we cared because we boycotted the Olympics, blaming the Russians for starting the war that we had started. Well, it turned out badly. The Mujahideen, the fundamentalist Muslims that we were supporting, when they took control of that country, thanks to Americans' weapons, they acted badly. They tortured their own citizens. And Al-Qaeda was part of this because Osama bin Laden was smarter than the average Muslim, and he was pretty good with computer skills, and he created a database of Mujahideen from around the Muslim world. And the Al-Qaeda name is one that we branded him with because it's called the base. It's the database of names of Mujahideen. And so we created Al-Qaeda, the CIA, the American president, a national security advisor. We manufactured our next enemy. Now, Al-Qaeda would have gone on and hated America, certainly, because it's in Islam's DNA to hate anyone who's not a Muslim and want to kill them. That's what the Quran orders Muslims to do. That is following Muhammad's example, and therefore it's part of Sharia law. But it really became intense because when Saddam Hussein invaded Kuwait and was headed for Saudi Arabia, which would have been in our interest had he controlled Kuwait and Saudi Arabia, he was in our pocket, too. We were supplying him with chemical and biological weapons, even helping him develop nuclear weapons because we wanted him to be the sharp end of the stick against Iran, since we had butchered the relationship with Iran so badly and the Ayatollah had turned it into a Shiite theocracy. And so when Saddam Hussein, who was a secularist dictator, invaded Kuwait, the United States president at the time, who had made his living by enriching the Kuwaitis and having the Kuwaitis enrich him through the Carlyle Company and military investments, managing those military investments and him making a percentage on them, he went to the aid of the Saudis, who had been his benefactors, and the Kuwaitis, who were America's enemies, funneling Islamic terrorism, funding it, and he wanted the United States to risk its soldiers and its wealth to drive Saddam Hussein, who was another one of our allies, out of those countries. And that was the first Gulf War. Well, at the same time, Osama bin Laden was making a plea with the Saudi Arabians to say, listen, we just defeated the world's second largest military, the Soviet Union. We can certainly defeat Saddam Hussein. We hate Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda hated Saddam Hussein because he was a secularist. They said, let us attack the infidel. Well, the Saudi Arabian government knew that they had George Bush under control. They didn't know if they could continue to control Osama bin Laden or whether his popularity after such success would rival their own and they would lose their kingdom to him. So they allowed America to fight the first Gulf War in a counterproductive manner. What that shows, however, is that Al-Qaeda and Iraq were foes, and now the United States wants to pretend as if we went into Iraq to fight Al-Qaeda. No, we enraged Al-Qaeda, a terrorist organization that we ourselves created when we trumped Osama bin Laden and got the Sauds to agree that we would defend them, slighting their own, Mr. Terror himself, Osama bin Laden. That's what enraged him. That's why he picked up on the plan and endorsed the plan that Ramzi Youssef had conceived. And the myth of Al-Qaeda is now perpetrated throughout the halls of this country. You read it everywhere that we're at a war against Al-Qaeda. And what little of Al-Qaeda exists is because we created them. And then we invaded a country based upon defeating them when, in fact, that they were arch enemies with that country and had no presence there. The United States has created a myth that has led to 10,000 American deaths. 10,000 Americans have died fighting a mythical enemy. an enemy that only exists because we have created them, and that they're really nothing. I mean, it's the totality of Al-Qaeda is nothing. They aren't the molecular weight of naval lint. Islamic terror is real. But the root, the common denominator of all Islamic terrorism is Islam. It's not Al-Qaedaism. It's not bin Ladenism. We made a bad situation worse in Afghanistan when we invaded because we pushed the most fundamentalist Muslims, the very Muslims that we had empowered and enriched and equipped with our weapons, out of Afghanistan into Pakistan, where they promptly destabilized that country, and they have nuclear weapons. That was suicidal. What we did in Afghanistan was counterproductive. We made a bad situation worse. And 15 minutes after we leave, the Taliban will return as if we were never there. Means every one of those Americans who died, died in vain. And we made nothing better. The only thing that we can point to is the education of little girls, and yet everyone who knows what is happening in Afghanistan attests to the fact that the treatment of little girls is far worse in Afghanistan post-Taliban, now that America is in charge, and the government we propped up is amongst the most corrupt on earth. I'm Yada. This is Shattering Myths. Back in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We have a call from Nick in Wisconsin. I think he wants to return to the question surrounding Edward Snowden, the whistleblower that brought us the revelation that the American government had decided that the American people were the enemy, and that the government thought it was appropriate to collect information in violation of its constitution against the American people. Hello, Nick. Welcome to the program.
Hello. So he blew a whistle. The
right.
Government is doing something it's not supposed to. Yet
correct.
He asks for asylum in Venezuela, in countries that are most that there's no other ones like it. Why would he want to be there if freedom is what he wants, you know, if, you know.
Yeah, the reason that he is limited in the number of countries and what kind of countries he can seek asylum is he can't seek asylum in countries that are the living embodiment, for example, of freedom. The countries that would be listed each year as the freest countries to live in, you'll find New Zealand very high on that list. You'll find Costa Rica very high on that list. You'll find Chile very high on that list. Now, the reason that he can't get asylum in those three countries, for example, is that the United States government is really dastardly. And we have overtly threatened every country, and clandestinely threatened every country that would provide him with asylum. We have actually passed by 100% vote in the U.S. Senate immediate sanctions on any country that offers him asylum. So he isn't seeking asylum in countries that offer the epitome of the kind of lifestyle that he is advocating, which is freedom. He is seeking asylum in the countries that are willing to provide it to him because they are not afraid of U.S. sanctions.
Big bad boy.
Yeah. US. Yeah. So you really have to go to countries that have someone that is leading those countries who knows that the United States isn't the country we want to trust anyway. And so we'll offer him asylum for that purpose. Virtually every country in South America and Central America has come to hate America's guts. I mean, America has done everything that we can do to inflame and irritate our neighbors. We have been obnoxious, and so they don't like us, but a lot of them are still dependent upon trade with us, and so they're not going to thumb their nose at us in this way.
So then another question.
Mm-hmm.
How come no one else saying that the only people Obama the only exemption Obama had in his spying deal is the not to spy on the mosques.
Yeah.
No one else is saying, where did you get that from anyway? Because I'd like to know tell the others.
Right.
Thing.
You know, I will. I'll have to go back. You know, one of the things I do with when I have the news stories that I share each day is that after the days I talk, I will take them off the top of my news feed stories and put them at the bottom and continue to cycle through the news that way. So I always have the ability to go back. At this moment and say, here's the source that provided that information, and it was quite detailed. I will on a future program go through my archives of news, and I will tell you who the source was and where I found it. But the information was extraordinarily detailed. I'm normally very skeptical when I read things that sound too good to be true or too bad to be true in this case. But it was in the midst of a very credible source, and the specific informant was very credible and had details that caused me to say that the story is legitimate. There is a specific procedure within the Obama administration that would allow the FBI to gather information on mosques or Islamic organizations, and thus far that approval within the White House has not been offered. And the reason that beyond, and I will tell you who the exact source was on a future program as I have a chance to go through my news, but the reason that it's so credible is that I've had many stories that I have shared that are very well documented that show that all FBI training materials on terrorism specifically redact Islam. There is absolutely no mention of Islam in any FBI or CIA training procedures or educational papers. I'm Yana. We'll be back after the break.